something we've talked about before. Hey, what's problem? What is a problem with you right now? Or maybe what is helping you along right now has a lot to do with what you were at another time. Past life. And a gentleman is here to talk to you and I about the effect of past lives on our lives and the use of that in therapy. And how getting into this and looking at it closely and relating that is working very well, past life therapy. Dr. Morris Netherton. Dr. Netherton, welcome to the Open Mind Show. And congratulations on the work that you've been doing.
Thank you.
Do past lives have an effect on the life we're living right now?
Every indication is that they do.
Really?
Very much, yes.
In what way have you gone about to come to that conclusion?
Well, I began 18 years ago with a very basic premise and procedure. I spent 18 years developing it and working with it, and probably have reached beyond now the total number of 3,000 to 4,000 actual sessions in which, in every one of them, perhaps maybe two or three, the person I've worked with has found experiences coming from what certainly seems to be a past life, and affecting or causing behavior currently here and now. So what I have to say is that after 18 years of experiencing this, I've had to come to the conclusion that what I'm seeing on my couch in my office is a past life experience. It's the only answer for most of what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the results that I've gotten with it, not only me but other people who use it as well, indicates that the use of this as a therapeutic tool is most effective.
Is your background in psychiatry, psychology?
Psychology.
Psychology,
yes.
And psychologists and psychiatrists both have a great deal of difficulty with this problem. You know, we have a number of them here at the station whom I have the greatest respect for. I think Dr. David Viscott understands that.
Sure.
And I think probably would say amen to a lot of the things you have. Some of the others may look at you funny. We haven't.
It wouldn't be the first time I've been looked at funny.
But here you are, a psychiatrist. Got your PhD in that. You've been in practice for a long time. You have, for 18 years or more, dealt with various clients. And you're saying that past life therapy seems to be a key to their problem, that they're being motivated and things are happening to them because of past lives. How do you find that out? Do you go into hypnosis with them, or how is it done?
No. The method as we use it is not done with a formal hypnotic induction. I find that that is, in many instances, counterproductive to what we're looking for. The solution to any problem that anyone experiences at any level includes the use of a conscious mind, or a rational part of the mind. And many times to use formal hypnotic induction is to eliminate that rational area. Therefore, you've taken away a part of the mind that is needed to solve a problem. We try to keep the rational cognitive mind active and aware and functioning while focusing beneath that into the unconscious level. And we use sometimes physical problems, physical ailment, pain.
Mm-hmm.
We use psychological definition. We ask someone, and part of what we train so intensively for is to learn to psychologically diagnose or hear what the person is saying. The only other step needed after that is just a focusing of that person into that problem.
Does a person really have an idea when they're talking to you that they're saying things based upon a past life? Or what is it that you look for? What do you see? If you have them in a tranced state.
You look for them. You get them to look for and to re-experience a sense of reality about what they're doing. Problems, as we view it, and I must emphasize that as we define them, problems here and now come from a re-stimulated old memory. Now, Dr. Freud and most therapists today would tell you that our childhood memories affect our lives now, that most of us react today under stress based on childhood and sometimes even infant experiences.
Prenatal, maybe.
Right. Well, one of the most intense places that we work is prenatal and birth.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you talk about the source of a problem, all we do simply with this process is take it just back further than most other therapies have gone. We go back beyond just infancy and childhood, into birth, into prenatal, And I'm, for the great skeptics of the world, I'm sorry, but there is that dimension beyond our conception. And there are too many people that have found it to say that it doesn't exist.
So in a conscious state, they're telling you about something that happened in another lifetime.
Right.
And you haven't put them under a hypnotic trance to do this or induced it in any other way.
No, and I think that it's important to note that they don't tell me about it. This is done in a first-person reliving, and it's very real. And if the pain...
They're acting the scene again.
Right. They're right back in it. And the whole attempt of this, the whole purpose of this, is to finish it, is to resolve it, is to let them know that this great secret or this great fear or this great pain or whatever has dominated their life, that they did survive it, and that they don't need to continually relive it again.
Now, these kind of hurts can be physical hurts, emotional hurts, guilt hurts.
Yes.
All kinds of things that can transcend from one lifetime to another with that consciousness that goes on. You know, some people want to call it the soul or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. That which is above and beyond the physical body.
Right. Mm-hmm. That consciousness that is a part of us all.
Right.
Spiritual intelligence is one way we can look upon it.
Right.
That seems to live on. Let's get back to you in just a moment.
All right.
Dr. Morris Netherton is my guest tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. This is Open Mind. And we want to talk to you very carefully and very closely. And we want you to listen closely about the reality of the past life. You've lived before upon your life now. And that can have a lot of influence from, well, your physical well-being to your mental well-being to your emotional state to the way you view the world.
Right.
And your research is seeing... We're seeing more and more of this now. There's quite a group of you that are involved in past life therapy.
Right.
The present time. You look upon it very seriously. What kind of a success rate are you having? Or are you able to take therapy of this nature that works where, say, the conventional therapy hasn't worked for someone?
Yes. I've never been a great stickler for statistics and keeping records, but the feedback that I get is that we have a phenomenal success rate with it. One of the biggest advantages of it is it's very accelerated. It works very quickly, and it does bring about a great deal of intensity. It's not a prolonged type of therapy that's eased into. It goes almost directly to trauma. It goes almost directly to the heart of the matter. And as such, if the person continues in therapy, and 99% of them do, then the support system that they get by continuing in therapy begins to really bring about results very quickly.
Hmm. Have you seen it work where conventional therapists just wasn't able to do anything then?
Yes. I would be willing to bet that at any given point, if you looked at the referrals that we get from our peers, 75% of them are cases that everybody else has given up on.
Hmm.
I think we're the court of last resort. I sometimes wish they would send us some of the easier ones because... It gets a bit difficult just sitting there getting referrals that are constantly looking at us as the last...
Try the other stuff, and if that doesn't work, we'll send you to Morris.
Right.
That always does work.
I had one woman I was working with who was about 75, and she said, Dr. Netherton, and she was very serious about this, she said, Dr. Netherton, you're the last kook there is. If you don't work, nobody's going to. And she realized what she said to me, and she got terribly upset, and I said, that's perfectly okay. I've been called worse. But that's what our That's really what we are.
Mm-hmm.
This is a traumatic experience.
I think it is for a lot of people because our ethic, our society doesn't allow for that kind of sinking.
Right.
That we came from somewhere and are going somewhere and it was nothing before and it's not going to be anything except some sort of a limbo until Judgment Day.
Right. Yeah.
Before. And whenever you start shaking at those belief systems and proving that those belief systems are based upon perhaps a myth, that it's very difficult for some people.
Right.
What are the most common kind of problems that seem to carry over from one lifetime to another as you've seen them?
One of the most obvious ones that comes up most of the time, many times, is, of course, sexual dysfunction. It will respond the quickest. We can have a very quick resolution to sexual dysfunction where standard procedures with it would take 2 to 3, 4 years. We're working with it in 3 to 4 or 6 months. Simply, again, because we dare to go where nobody else will. We dare to say that you're going to get your sexual attitudes and sexual intercourse during the prenatal period of time between your parents. So we're not afraid to go look there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not afraid to let the person on the couch experience, be it real or not. No, I mean, that's not the point. That's an experience rape. That's an experience being raped and raping. That's an experience, the sexual horrors that have gone on with man as long as man has existed. If you start releasing that type of trauma from the mind, then you start getting results here and now if it's done the way it should be. The phobic behavior, compulsive behavior, depression, these all respond very rapidly to this. Because, again, because it's very pinpointed. It's very direct.
Hmm. Carried over from a previous experience. That
right.
It was so traumatic at that one time. Did you find it working the other way, that it was so euphoric that the euphoria of it all stays on in this lifetime, too, or they wouldn't be coming to see you, I guess.
Sometimes that's a problem with us, because all we see is the horror and the pain and the yelling and the trauma. And people ask us outright, have I never been happy? I say, yeah, but the happy lives don't cause you problems. You want to pay me to find yourself being happy? I'd much rather get over your problems and let your happiness take over.
It'll affect your next life.
Right. And this one.
And this one as well.
Sure.
All right. It is, it's always very gratifying for me, of course. We've been talking about this for many years on this program. The effect of the past life, the effect this life is going to have on a future life. That reincarnation is a fact of life, whether you want to believe it or not. It doesn't make any difference. One of these days, you'll come to understand it.
You'll
catch on eventually. And maybe we can help you think about that. I want you to be thinking about some questions for Dr. Netherton. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind. And Open Mind tonight, I'm Bill Jenkins. We're talking about past life therapy, the effect of past lives on your lives. We see that it really is happening. You're treating it now. You're using this concept and this idea that you brought something with you when you came in. And sometimes it bothers you.
Yeah, you are not a blank slate.
It just didn't come in clean.
No, you didn't come in clean.
And the only way to deal with it, what a feeling that must be. There's something that's bothering you, and it could be physical, it could be emotional. You don't know what it is. You know that you've never experienced anything. You have a great fear of, in your case, you say a lot of people have problems with sex. There's no reason for you to have a sexual dysfunction that you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that it wasn't your thought at all. It was the thought of another guy that was along that you used to be.
Right, right.
And you were able to get down to the heart of that very quickly, right?
Yes, and very quickly, in a matter of minutes.
Mm. And you do not use hypnotism. You just, what is it, look him in the eye?
Yeah. No. You actually ask the mind to begin to focus itself onto the problem. And as you do that, an altered state of consciousness does occur. What I have said is that we don't use formal hypnotic inductions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is an altered state of consciousness, of course. But that state of consciousness comes and goes as it's needed with the conscious mind. And many times it's simply done by asking someone to locate a feeling in their body. And then asking them to use the physical location in the body to locate a similar body in another time and place. And as that is done, they find that the reality changes. And they begin to bring in more and more reality from another time and place, more and more memory. And what begins to happen with that is they begin to see that they've been trying to make that memory real here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the problems have occurred.
Now, when they start talking to you in this way, do they identify the person they were, the time that they were? Do you get into it that deeply, or are you just dealing now with a feeling or with a therapeutic problem?
Well, you're dealing with a therapeutic process. Now, actually, you're in many times too deep to get a name and dates or locations. I tell people that I work with, if they want that, and many, some do, if they want that, to tell me, because if they don't, we'll never get it.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, then we make a special effort at some time toward the end of our sessions to extract that data.
But that isn't the prime purpose at all. You want to find out what the problem is.
Right.
And if you can get some historical data along the way, that's icing on the cake. Have you been able to follow through with some of that, get some, and find out that it's verifiable?
Oh, yes. Yeah. First time that happened was, I had been working about 3 years, and someone sent, I've forgotten now, I think it was into the South somewhere, and got a death certificate based on the information that we had gleaned from the session.
And the person did exist.
Yeah, and the death certificate came back, and my client showed up a week later, after he got it,
mm-hmm.
carrying this thing, and he said, look, there I am.
There you are.
I'm buried in a cemetery somewhere in Waco, Texas, or something.
In Waco.
I'm not sure it was Waco, but it was near there.
Well, that's a good place to be buried. Don't tell Waco Pat. Don't mention that to Waco Pat. Well, it's going to be difficult, I think, for people to listen to people like yourself and the others we've had on the show that just have a hard time dealing with this, that this actually does go on. But more importantly, is that these influences of these past lives, have you ever gone and found out that an influence went from life to life to life before it got here, that it sort of strung through maybe a series of three and four lives?
It always does.
And was never resolved?
It always does. That's why it still bothers you, is because it's not resolved.
Mm.
It comes from a developmental pattern. The problem today is the result of an unresolved developmental pattern which exists, stretching back through time as far almost as you want to go with it.
Mm. We're always the same, then, unless we've made some sort of evolving processes in a lifetime.
Yes. It's much like a baby in uterus. The baby is always processing. It's always growing. It's always still the same thing. It's still always a baby. It's still always a fetus. But it is always changing to different stages of development. And that's much what we are at the infinite level. We're always changing, always moving into a different stage of development. And you take that problem and the need to resolve it with you into the new stage of development.
We talk a lot about spiritual intelligence, and I look upon the spiritual intelligence as the sum total of all of your living experience.
That's right.
And certainly that develops a character and a nature and a personality, good, bad, or indifferent. And you do carry that with you.
Mm-hmm.
We see that happening more and more, and you now are treating it, because sometimes that character that you've carried along needs a little fine-tuning, or a kick in the hiney, or
right.
Whatever it is to get it on a little better trail. Kind of interesting work, isn't it?
Yes, it's very interesting.
Did you dream that you would be moving into this kind of research and this kind of therapy as you were in school and you had all these great ideas of helping everyone with their feelings, I'm sure?
I was in a different profession altogether when I first began developing this and using it. And I moved into this profession and became this type of therapist. And for the first 3 to 4 years, I still didn't believe it myself. And it took me a long time to accept the fact that I had actually was now in this doing it. And no, if you'd asked me when I was a teenager or even when I was beginning my 30s, if I was going to do this, I'd have said no.
Well, did you believe in the effect of a past life on the present life before you started treating from that angle, or did the treatment determine or shape your belief system?
I went through a past life experience of my own, which was keyed this whole thing into place. I still wasn't sure about it. I still thought it could be imagination, it could be fantasy, it could be a book I read, it could be movies. But then I began to work with it. I began, because it was very beneficial for me. And I began to more and more realize that reincarnation as a fact was the only thing that would answer the many questions and the many things that I saw happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, I really couldn't say that I actually believed it as a fact until I had been actually working with it about 3 years.
Then it sort of came home very heavy with you.
Yeah, then I sort of had to do the proverbial believe it or get off the pot,
You remind me in a way of Dr. Frank Baranowski.
No, he's a good friend.
He's done an awful lot of research.
Right.
He was a devout Catholic.
Yes.
And his research, not only would he get the past life stories, but then the research would prove that those people actually existed hither and yon and everywhere. And it was very, very difficult for his religious upbringing and his religious belief, but the fact of the matter was still there. You ready to talk to the folks out there?
Certainly.
See what they have for you. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. And let me give you the numbers in case you want to get in and talk to Dr. Morris Netterton in Los Angeles Saturday night. Could it be a past life influence that caused me to enjoy smoking cigarettes so much and burning myself as I just... But I've been a tobacco farmer in South Carolina the last time through.
No, but you could sure have died in a forest fire and got out that way.
It's not easy being like this, you know. I'd like to know who's responsible for that.
You make it look very easy.
Let's go to the callers and see what's on their line. Peter, welcome aboard.
Yes, Bill. Your show is very good.
Thank you.
And I've never called before. This is the first time. But I felt like I've always been influenced by the ancient Greeks, and I've always felt that way. I'm 25 now, and I felt like science motivated until just recently, where I felt like I'm more an artist than I am a scientist. And I just wondered how you could bring that about. You know, how could you tell what type of, you know, if you were from a Greek society or any type of society, how you could bring it about?
Well, I think the most important thing for you to perhaps consider isn't where it's coming from, but what it is you're trying to do with your life. If you want to change your life from being scientific to being creative with the arts, then does it really matter to you if it's coming from Greece or Rome or 17th century France?
No.
Okay, that's what you should focus on.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to get hung up with having, quote, lived in Greece, end quotes, and in so doing, sort of stifle yourself. If you really want to know about what's going on with that part of your life, then certainly our offices can help you. There are competent people that can allow you to explore that. But I can tell you that if you were to come to someone trained in my method with this, we would explore with you the changes that you're wanting to make in your life and let that come from wherever it is.
Yes. I've already made the choice to become more artistic than scientific.
Okay. Do you feel blocked in that?
Huh?
Do you feel blocked?
No. Actually, everybody was telling me to go the science route, you know, become an engineer or something like that, and I was reluctant for some reason in the back of my mind, and finally I decided I'm going to do what I want to do, and...
Good for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
I have there's a little motto that we have in our offices, and I'm going to tell it to you, and it may sound flippant, but it really isn't. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You've made your decisions. It sounds like you've gotten the people around you to accept them, and hail to the Greeks. If that's where it comes from, use it and good health, and don't start poking around with it unless it causes you some problems. If it works on you, then you work on it.
Uh-huh. Well, part of the reason why I even feel that way is because I read Homer, the Iliad,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the book seems so neat to be so fluid and so easy to understand.
Good.
And
it's
a lot of
way
people
for
that I
yes.
talk to, it seemed like it was hard to understand.
Right. Well,
and it was different with me.
You have an affinity with that style, that time period, that way of thinking that Homer expressed.
What,
yeah.
And what you've just discovered, of course, is just the basic truth about the human mind, that we go back in our history and pick up those things which make it difficult and easy for us to live. And it sounds like you picked up an easy one, so enjoy it, my friend.
Okay.
Run with it, Peter.
Real good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ray, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Nevedin.
Hi.
My question is more like, how do you know that the person is ready for a past life regression? How do you think that person is going to react? You did mention that some patients don't react positively, and you can no longer even treat them. Perhaps they're worse off than when they came to you.
No, I didn't say that.
No.
But thank you for bringing up a valuable point.
Mm-hmm.
This type of therapy, if done incorrectly, is very dangerous. And there are many people who seem to feel that regressing into a past life is a sort of a party game. And it can be dangerous. But we work with someone extensively before we even begin to explore this material with them. But my basic assumption is that if you have presented yourself in my offices and you're sitting on my couch and you are capable of defining your problems or allowing me to help you define your problems, then you're ready to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the unconscious mind, that infinite part of us, will not allow us to get into something where we shouldn't be and will almost invariably direct us into something if we should be there.
Do you think you're communicating with what we call soul?
No, I think yes. I don't think you can. I don't think you can talk period without communicating to your soul. It's interesting how we want to separate the soul sometimes from the being that we are, the rest of us that we are.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're communicating with is an unconscious part of the soul, and it's there to serve a purpose. It's there to keep presenting developmental problems over and over again until they are appropriately and totally resolved.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think a goal of a human being would be to get off of this continuous, I don't know if you call it karma, like most faiths would refer to, but to eventually learn all the lessons and not have to return?
Isn't the goal of a baby eventually to reach viability and be born?
So being born, being not being born. I don't understand the analogy.
Okay, the soul is going to do the same thing the baby does.
Uh-huh. The experience, all the experiences.
Right. Yes. Uh-huh. Your soul is going to do once what the baby's body will do many, many millions of times.
Uh-huh. Do you prescribe to any spiritual faith that works with reincarnation in a very realistic and scientific way?
Religious faith?
Any kind of faith. Are you familiar with possibly Ekankar?
Oh, yes. There are several groups like that, sure. Ekankar, the Rosicrucians.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very valuable local centers that have integrated religious beliefs and these theories very, very effectively.
The early day Christians believed in reincarnation.
Yes, they did.
For about the first five centuries.
And well over three-quarters of the people on the face of the earth today believe in it.
About 85%, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, how do you think this will affect any future lives you may have?
How do I think it'll affect
me? It's a process that you conduct.
I hope that I'm not hanging on to all the stuff that I'm working with people. If it is, I'm in for big trouble. I hope that this is an ongoing process of my own, too, and I hope that it will help eliminate and clear and bring about a greater sense of clarity for myself. That's my sense of it.
Well, good luck. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Great. Thank you very much for that. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Morris Netterton. I'm Bill Jenkins. You're invited to call. We're talking about the effect of past lives on this life, and you just touched on perhaps the effect of this life on the next one.
I'm a student of science, and I have sort of changed my beliefs about when you're talking about tonight over the past couple of years. And I just wondered if you or any of your colleagues have postulated or defined this dimension outside the human mind, outside the body.
If
you've tried to, define it as, being somewhere lying between like zero and affinity, or where it is, or in relation to the solar system, outside the solar system, somewhere.
Are you trying to get some sort of definition as to where the other side is, Cliff? Is that what you're asking?
Oh, I'm just wondering if he's fooled around, or any colleagues have fooled around, or if anybody's, tried to do any work with that.
The state that you're in between physical lives, maybe?
Yeah, well, as far as free energy, if I'm trying to say if the cell dies, once it's dead, it's dead. And if he's saying that there's an afterlife, the energy that was there, okay?
Yes.
After death occurs, or the organism shows no signs of life after
what we
define as life.
Yes.
Is where is the energy going, or have you tried to define that as a dimension in time?
Well, if you track with someone in a session and you work with them through a death experience, what you will find them seeing and knowing is an actual sensing and experiencing of the body's death. The heart will stop, the breathing will stop, and death will become a reality. And at any given time after that, and it depends on the circumstances of the death, the person will perceive themselves simply to leave or lift out or disconnect from the physical level, at which point they are just a ball of or a center of energy which contains all of the infinite qualities that were inherent or present in the body. And they move freely. They seem to know all. There seems to be, at that point of death, a rejoining of the unconscious tape-recorded parts of the personality with the spiritual. And at that point, there seems to start a developmental or a process which will push you forward or allow you to make choices to go forward.
You have dropped all of the mental this intelligence process that
right,
were
right.
necessary to
you
make
know.
Your body function.
Sure.
And
know.
To have you cope with this lifetime, and that's all now been welded into the overall consciousness
right.
that you have.
It's become part of the total.
It's become part of the total, Arm. That is one of the functions of the monad.
Right.
One of these nights we'll have to do the monad
okay.
show here.
And you don't believe that you can really define it then, or you haven't been able to really define it as actually if you're going to...
Let me be very honest with you. I've never tried.
Do you know anybody that has?
Oh, yeah.
Really tried and we're
there are billions of words written on the topic. And I would advise you to...
So, I mean, do you know if anybody has real data?
Yes, there's a lot of people
oh, yeah.
who have data.
Yes.
And, in fact, you can go witness the data and yourself if you ever want to try to take one of those little trips out of the body.
Yeah, right.
And you can go into that astral realm.
Right.
Where...
Well, could you suggest anybody that's...
Oh, yes, the Munro Institute of Applied Sciences has a seminar coming up, I think, the latter part of this next week or this next month. But I'll tell you more about that later. And they get you out of body. They haven't gotten me out of body yet. I haven't been able to pull that one off. I've walked on the hot coals, but I haven't been able to go out of body yet.
Okay,
everybody in L.A. goes out of body with Bill.
Okay, thanks a lot. Dr. Nevin, keep us the work we need to find out.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
Cliff, look up the Munro Institute of Applied Sciences. They have a Western office, and that would they can be very, very helpful into your questions.
Okay,
and their first hour is over, and we just sat down. We just got off the freeway. But it always happens that fast. What a night we have. We have another hour to go. Dr. Morris Netterton is with us. We're talking about... past life therapy, the effect of past lives on this life, they are quite often profound. And it might be well for you to think about some of those things that you're experiencing and wondering where they're coming from. And we'll have another hour to talk about them, so stay with us. Bill Jenkins and with me, Dr. Morris Netterton. We're talking about past life therapy. We're talking about reincarnation. We're talking about how these two facts of life have a lot to do with the life you're leading right now, the problems that you have. We've had some questions about what it's like on the other side. We'll get a chance to find out about that, too, next week. I might remind you that Thomas Jacobson will be here and Dr. Peoples will join us. As Thomas is a trance medium, he'll go into trance and Dr. Peoples will answer your question. He is amazing. Have you ever heard Dr. Peoples? He astounds everyone. That's just not fair that he knows all of those things. And we did some research on Dr. Peoples and found out that this man did exist.
How about that?
And he wrote some incredible books back mm-hmm. in the... I've got a book that was published in 1886. Now, Thomas, unless he's listening tonight, doesn't know that I have that book. I'm going to spring that on Dr. Peoples next week.
See?
And say, I've got a picture of him, in fact.
Oh.
Great big beard, everything like that. Well, let's go on to our callers. Ben has been waiting on the line for a long time. Ben, welcome aboard.
Yeah, well, thanks. Hey, when I first got on, my stomach was all vibrating. I thought, God, this is exactly what I do, and here's someone representing it, and that's real wonderful.
Hey, what do you do, Ben?
I'm a past life regressor.
Are you?
Yeah.
You use hypnotism?
Yeah, most of the time, not all the time, depending on the person and what I'm dealing with, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Hypnotism is very effective for, like, problems.
You have a question for Morris? You two just want to do a little bit of shop talk here.
Well, if you want to, that's okay, too. But, yeah, there's a couple things I wanted to bring up, Morris, and I wanted, you know, if you were to comment on these. And the first thing is, during the human continuum, in other words, during the time that the being experiences being a human and going through that experience of the various human lives, have you, from your data, developed a context within which that's happening? Like, not the context that's offered maybe like by Alice Bailey or, you know, all the others that are the popular. Have you developed an exact context that you've seen yourself happening?
Talk some more.
Okay, well, in terms of a context, I mean, like, what's the bigger picture that the reincarnation is happening in? In other words, that's part of a drama in a larger play. Have you tapped into much, have your clients, like, tapped into much of that larger drama that's going on?
Do you mean a larger overview of what their individual growth is? Or
yes, like, yeah. In other words, they may be experienced. Seems like that most of the people I'm dealing with have experienced anywhere from 10 to 30 human lives. That seems to be about it for this human continuum experience.
Oh, my dear friend, go back and count again. It starts at the animal level and comes forward for millenniums of time.
That's what I'm starting to talk about. You know, in other words, as a human being, they experience so many lives, and then, you know, of course, before that, they start to go down to the different various kingdoms.
Have you stopped to think how many times you can be conceived, miscarried, and reconceived, and it's just a period of 100 years?
Sure.
I stopped counting my own past lives at 350.
Wow, that many.
You know, Dr. Peoples told me I had great patience because I had been a rock once.
Well, I remember experiencing being birds and, you know, other things too, you know. But I was talking more about, like, the context. In other words, have, you know, some philosophy developed about how existence creates itself,
sure,
what it's doing.
I put the context of, and it seems for the work that I do, and it is, I keep it very literal and I'm very pinpointed, but I put it in the context of a pregnancy. The soul of man is aiming to return to, in a big circle, as if you want to use that,
sure,
to, it's going back where it came from, but it's going back, and it's going to return perfect. When a child is conceived, it has existed prior to that genetically in both parents. It has already existed, it just exists in a different form. At the point of conception, it will begin its developmental stage at the bottom of that stage, which is the embryo, the zygote. It will continue moving developmentally toward the top of that stage, which is at the end of 9 months delivery. The soul, I think, does the same thing. And I think that's the context that I seem to be continually working in.
Okay, yeah. Given that that's your own personal environment, that would be the environment that would come to you.
Right.
Yeah, and also next, I've done a lot of work, and apparently I existed during the time of the crucifixion and was there at that drama, and I've drawn in an awful lot of clients that have been there. Have you drawn in any, and have you got any pictures of what really happened there and anything that's realistic about the man Jesus?
In my first book, the publishers insisted on using episodes that I had coming in the practice.
Wonderful. Oh.
There are five. There were five listed in the book. Since then, there have been about 13 or 14 independent people in session giving the exact same details and the exact same scene and happenings, and giving it sometimes a year and a half to 2 years apart, without knowing each other. There were not three people crucified, according to what I find. There were hundreds. The hills were covered with them. The entire scene was one of revulsion and fear. And there is a phrase which I give to people to do with what they will. I make nothing of it myself because I don't really know what to make of it. But I have heard it repeated by these people independently of each other, time after time after time. I think that this phrase runs consistently through 9 of the episodes.
My point on this, of course, is that a large portion of the world, which is supposed to be like the sort of the elite coming from the heart, worships this man Jesus. And I find that maybe there's only a few of us who really know what Jesus was truly like, and these people are worshiping a myth. And I find that real upsetting, and I'm wondering whether you could talk about the man Jesus at all and any conclusions that you've drawn about him so these people will have something real to hold on to.
The main conclusion that I've come to with regards to that is that he was of the Essene priesthood, where he learned mass hypnosis, crowd control, pain control, and all the other things that people have to know to do what he set out in life to do. I don't think that detracts from what he was. And I certainly think, yes, my son, at one point in his life said, I think Jesus is probably looking down from heaven and saying, what in the world are you people doing all that for? And I think it was a greater truth than that than what the adults wanted to admit.
So I'm just so thrilled that you're on the planet doing this work and sharing it with people so they can actually take this next step in consciousness, you know, to the way it really is. And God bless you both. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Stay with it.
Best of luck in your work, Ben.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
And keep in touch on what you're finding out.
Right.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. With me tonight, Dr. Morris Netherton.
Dr. Morris, I want to make this short, or I won't make it too confusing. I have a son who's 30. He has been diagnosed as paranoia schizophrenic.
Yes.
Now, he had a very bad birthing. He was a preemie, and he almost died. Now, as you say, something is bothering him, and it's something very explosive. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Those two diagnoses themselves tell you what it is to try and cope with this
man. Right.
What I want to know is,
first of all, the one of the first places that we start looking for schizophrenia is in birth.
In birth.
We find many times that the use of drugs...
Nothing.
You
mean myself?
Yes.
No, sir.
You weren't... Okay. But just speaking in print, just in general,
yes.
What almost killed him?
What almost killed
him? Yeah, why did he almost die?
Because they held him back in the birth canal long after he was to be born, and it caused a... this mucus that they have in them.
Right.
It got down into the lungs.
Okay. You have a lot of conversation, a lot of mixed messages being put into a very small, unconscious baby at that point.
That's right.
And is he on medication at this point?
I can't keep him on it, Doctor.
I see. Well,
paranoid... That's one of his problems.
Yes. Is he hospitalized?
No, he's at home with me.
I see. We find that dealing with a paranoid schizophrenia is troublesome in that they need a support system around them, which my offices do not have when we start working with them, because we are going to be opening up some areas with these people that are very dynamic. And my guess is if he's 30 years old, that puts him back about 54, and that's coming right out of World War II, right out of Vietnam, or right out of Korea. And read out some of the horrors of the battlefield. I called anything from 1940 to 1955, 58, the time slot for the concentration camps and the various horror stories that the world has given us down through the years. He can be helped. This therapy will work with it. It is not instantaneous. It is not a panacea. We're not going to see him Friday afternoon from 2 to 4 and have him walk out cured.
Oh, no, I didn't think that's the way it would work.
But it will be a difficult process going through it.
Mm-hmm.
It will require at times two therapists to deal with him.
Yes.
There are other people that can deal with him, too, that are more equipped to do it, really, than we are. And I would urge you to call them and at least talk with them.
I see.
The N, that's A-N-N-E.
A-N-N-E.
Sippy. S-I-P-P-I.
P-P-I.
Clinic.
Clinic, yes.
In Los Angeles.
And where?
They do brilliant work with schizophrenics.
Angeles, huh? And is this way it's listed in the telephone book, Doctor?
It is. If you have trouble finding that, please call me at my offices and I'll have my secretary give you
the number. I have your number already from the screener.
Okay.
But if you feel that would be the place to go... I certainly will do my best to get him there.
Okay. If you have any problems locating it, please call me and we'll help you.
I will do that. And thank you. And thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Irene.
Bye.
Thank you, Irene, for being with us there. And we hope that helps. Sandra.
Good evening.
You're on.
To both of you.
Surprise.
It's a joy to speak to you.
You've been waiting there for so long, we decided we'd get
Well,
you.
I'm a little old lady in a wheelchair now.
Uh-huh.
But I am just beginning to scratch the surface of the study of reincarnation, and a friend gave me Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on a Limb.
Right. Fine.
And I was reading it today, and the thought occurred to me that if reincarnation is a fact and we are going to experience it, why is it that so many people fear the death process? If we have lived these other lives and have died all of these times, why is it that we cannot recall the death process as a pleasurable thing in contrast to a fearful thing? A fearful thing in our lives when we die.
Because most of the time, when it's been experienced in the past, it hasn't been a pleasurable thing. It's been one of pain and fear and terror.
And so that we keep remembering that from our past lives,
right,
other than the joy of going on to another plane?
Right. The unconscious mind will always lock on to the fear. It will lock on to the greatest amount of pain and fear. And most people aren't afraid of death. They're afraid of the process which brings death.
I see.
They're afraid of what happens to them, which brings them, their body, to death. Death itself, if you ask them, if you differentiate that with someone, they will tell you that they would actually might look, even look forward to death and what follows it.
Yes.
It's the process that gets them there.
Uh-huh.
But if you can place yourself for just a moment in on a battlefield, having a bayonet run through your middle,
uh-huh,
and all of the excruciating pain that would cause,
yes,
and you lock onto that as being the last thing you experience as a part of that experience,
uh-huh,
and you come into this lifetime here and now, and you find yourself embattled in a job or under stress with in a family situation, and the ulcer starts to happen in your stomach, then you're recreating that past death.
So it's the process leading up to the death, not the actual actual experiencing
sure.
of death. See, I'm in the medical profession, and I this question never occurred to me until today when I was reading, I forget which portion of this book I was reading, but the thought of reincarnation is so fascinating. And as I say, I'm just beginning to delve into it. And I must admit that it's a very believable premise.
Well, it's an interesting thing about data.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of data about reincarnation.
You don't know where to start.
There's no data about the
other. Where do you start to begin to study? The Bodhi tree, of course, is helpful.
Right.
The Bodhi tree is an excellent place.
That's great.
Start.
Yes. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sandra. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
We also are talking to Robin, who's on the line. Hi, Robin.
Hi there. What I wanted to ask is a variety of questions. First of all...
Limited, because we have a lot of calls.
Okay. When I experimented with LSD a number of years ago, I felt that I had some experiences which seemed to be a further continuation of some nightmares that I had had repeatedly as a child, and I felt like they made sense to me. Have you ever had patients come into you and say that taking LSD had been a trigger of getting them to understand pieces or see things of the past lives?
That was one of the LSD, the very beginning programs and testing. And it could possibly still be valuable. I'm sorry we've lost it as a diagnostic tool.
Me too. what is the youngest age patient you've ever worked with?
Five.
Five. Could you tell me anything more about your training? I feel like we sort of brushed through that.
Well, it's interesting. My training...
We did that before he got on the air.
My training has... The training that I have formally leading up to a PhD in psychology has absolutely nothing to do with past life therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I, to the best of my knowledge, I can remember learning nothing in a formal classroom that has brought me to develop or to work as a past life therapist. My training for...
Are there any classrooms that teach that?
I've got one.
You've got one.
I think I may have one of the only ones that teach it as basic theory and philosophy. My training, my master's degree was in correctional counseling.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at in juvenile correctional facilities for 5.5 years, and the PhD is in psychology simply because I thought I needed one to get on with what I was doing.
I understand. Okay, could you tell me how long would be an average or a typical length and cost of this treatment?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
I know. I'm speaking as...
I think it would be better that you call his office.
All
right.
Sure,
thank
give
you.
Us a call.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much for that. Now I want to ask you again, have you got your KABC talk radio card?
Oh, yes.
We got it to you this last hour, right? We got to get you one, Morris. Because you have an opportunity to win some terrific prizes from our surprise package. They're there for you, and you can have them. Different times of the day at night, we'll announce different talk radio card numbers. And if that number is yours and you call the station within a half hour, you can win at least one or two different prizes. And talking about your life and how it has probably been fashioned by your previous lives. And we have, I believe that's Helmy on the line.
Hello?
What's this about the Greek society, hon?
Hello?
Do you remember being in Greece?
Oh, yes,
I
do.
You do?
I'm calling because I'm going through an experience right now in which I'm writing a paper on, it's a little confusing, on the structure of the symbols in Crete, in pre-patriarchal Crete.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at both the archaeological evidence uncovered by Sir Arthur Evans, who uncovered the Palace of Knossos.
Yes.
And as I was writing this paper, and I'm still in the process of doing it, I've come up with a lot of, I've come with like sort of intuitive understanding of the nature of the religion that existed in the society, and it's not been written about, as far as I can tell, anywhere else. And I feel very connected to the material in a lot of ways, and I really very strongly think that I have had a past life. I have a very strong belief in past life, and I've studied quite a lot of it. And I'm not really calling for a response so much as I am just to share my feeling about this.
You want a suggestion?
Yeah.
Set your formal paper aside and just take a great big yellow tablet and about 18 well-sharpened pencils and just start writing. And just don't stop. Just keep writing and keep writing and keep writing and keep writing. And just to the stream of thought.
Well, I tell you, before I start writing any of this, I meditate. And I do tend to come out with, like, many papers at once. And then, I mean, not many different pages at a time. And then I sort of stop and and look it over and realize what I've come up with.
Right.
And so I don't know if I want to call that automatic writing, but I do definitely feel like I'm connecting with something that happened in my past, and it's very powerful. And I can give you an example of how it's affected me. Ever since I was very little, I have had a favorite name, which is Adriana.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very strange about this, and I've loved it, and I don't know why. And I've never known anybody by that name. Well, the goddess of the culture that I'm studying, her name is Ariadne.
Yes.
Which is just the Greek translation of the name that's my favorite name. And I don't know. The beauty of it is really, it's very simple in some ways.
Morris, do you find if someone has an affinity, as we discussed, I think, earlier with another young man who had this feeling about Greece, for a specific time period or a culture, that there is a previous life connection? You think?
Sure. What we look for is just a polarity, something that magnetizes or pulls to that.
Can it work the other way?
Push away?
Yeah, you can push away. Like, for instance, I hate the idea of going to Europe. I don't even like the Three Musketeers. You know, that time period just is a total bore to me.
Was the sword sharp?
I don't know.
Well,
what happened to me there?
I just thought of one question I would like to ask. Is in terms of body therapy, as I've heard many times, that if you have problems with certain areas of your body, it means one thing. Well, recently I've been very, very weak in the knees, which I have heard is a fear of letting go. And I have astral projected before.
Mm.
And when I...
Another one.
Yes, but my problem, well, when I have astral projected, I've tended to leave my body for very short periods of time and then gotten very afraid of the feeling and rushed right back. And right now I'm filled with a lot of fear about what I'm finding out. I'm excited and I'm so thrilled about this, my connection to this. And at the same time, I feel like I'm afraid to sort of leave the academic. I mean, I'm graduating right now. I'm graduating actually in 3 days.
Good.
Pardon me?
Good.
And in some ways, I feel like the fact that this is happening now is telling you that I'm leaving the academic and going into the intuitive, and I'm having this sort of graduation of the spirit, in a sense.
Well, that sounds interesting. Why don't you try the suggestion that Dr. Netherton gave you there?
I will.
All right. And thank you very much for sharing that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Emma. Well, Pocahontas just came in tonight. Share
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas, you look like a marvelous Indian princess.
Well,
tonight.
Well, thank you so much. But this is Cinco de Mayo, and I came directly from a Cinco de Mayo party, and I thought this was quite appropriate apparel.
Barbara Essenson is here. Going to be on here in about 20 minutes. What are you doing tonight,
Barbara? Yes. Well, we are going to be. First of all, I can see that these wonderful Pocahontas earrings are not going to work with a headset. They're driving me crazy. So it's a wonderful Cinco de Mayo kind of a get-up, but not so great for doing a talk show. Our first 2 hours, we're going to be talking about an issue that's been real hot recently, and in my mind it's always been an interesting issue, and it's First Amendment rights and pornography. And we are going to have in studio Carol Sobel from the American Civil Liberties Union, Jim Ferruzzo, a deputy DA, interesting man who, in terms of myself, and I went to Greece for the first time, and we were only going to be in Athens for one day, and so we were, before we went on this cruise, and we were tearing through these museums and sort of doing it because we knew we should. And there was a little room off to the side of the main room in the large museum in Athens. And I said, I really have to go in that room. And I didn't know why I had to go in that room, but I had to go into the room. And we got in there, and it was just one statue in there, and it was the goddess of the hunt, Diana. Now, it was me. She looked like me, or I looked like her. I guess maybe she came first. I'm not really sure. But I couldn't leave that room. There was such a strong tie or feeling, and it wasn't like deja vu. I really didn't feel as if it was an entirely different feeling.
Just
I really
a connection there.
Tremendous connection.
Familiarity. It happens a lot, doesn't it, Morris?
All the time. In fact, I advise people, if you're going to be traveling, especially in Egypt and Greece and those countries, work your stuff out before you go, because you can come back very depressed and very sick and very frightened. You were lucky. You had a good experience with it.
I had a very good experience, and I wanted to go back. I mean, I wanted to learn more.
Do you know what we find when people find a statue like that? I'm remembering two people in particular that found the same affinity for the statues of a god. I think there's some doubt that that god ever existed in flesh. But what we found was that the person that had the affinity had posed for the statue. When the statue had been done by the artisan, that the ruler had to do it,
yeah,
that person had been chosen from the harem or from the group to sit and pose. And that's what created the affinity.
You may have been standing there scantily dressed.
Talking about harbor. Pornography. We always segue, Bill.
And it came out Diana.
Yeah, well, maybe, can I ever steal one of your guests to have on my show? Is
sure,
that
you're welcome to them.
Okay, well, I'll talk to the good doctor after.
Okay. Barbara will be along right after the news at midnight. I want you to join her. And we'll be back to Dr. Morris Netherton in just a moment. Kind. Gladys, welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you very much. You have a delightful program tonight.
Thank you.
The question I want to ask is whether or not your guest believes in regression as well as progression as a soul evolves. In other words, is it possible to go from the greater to the lesser? Or must it always, or should it always be from the lesser to the greater?
I will not attempt to speak as any great authority on that. I will only tell you what my theory is and what my findings are.
Uh-huh.
Does a baby begin in the ninth month and go backwards?
No.
It has a progressive, natural, ongoing developmental
uh-huh.
history to it.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you put someone down on the couch in one of these sessions, and at any given point, if you project them forward in time to what appears to be a lifetime that is yet to come in the year 2050 or whatever,
yeah,
they will come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
They will come up with something that seems very real. However, it is my belief that that is only there as long as their life doesn't change here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is that if you do that type of thing, people then start living their life here and now as though that future thing is a reality.
Uh-huh.
And
there's a goal.
Right.
Well, I was progressed once. In fact, I played the tapes on the air. I haven't played all of the tapes into the future. And I was really under a hypnotic or in a tranced state there. I said, I'm quite a storyteller.
Uh-huh.
I got my original information on reincarnation by reading Emmett Fox. And I think he gives a fairly clear, a clear explanation for a person who knows nothing about
right.
reincarnation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to mention the fact, in our family, it was never discussed. I never discussed my belief in reincarnation, although I've had it for many years. But I have a daughter who is now 39 years old. And about 8 years ago, we were driving in the car, and this was the only time I had ever noticed this. We came to a railroad crossing, and she came to a dead stop. And I said, why? And as calmly as could be, she turned around and said, well, Mother, that's the way I died the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of frightening, wasn't it?
Well, it was startling. And then she saw herself as a child between the age of 5 and 6. And she was walking from one railroad car to another and fell down between the two cars.
Right. And she had a recall of it.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is very unusual,
scary.
Isn't it, Morris, for that to happen?
It's very unusual for someone to be able to verbalize it.
Oh, well, I mean, it's been with her apparently all her life, but I was never aware that she stopped for a railroad truck.
Yeah.
Gladys, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
And thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
I'm Bill Jenkins. This is Open Mind.
Well, Bill, it's nice to...
Next, David F. Diamond with a message.
A very quick question from you.
Yeah, hi, Bill. Yeah, I just came in and I heard your guest saying that people that were born, I think between 42 and 55, had died during the war or something like that.
Great possibility.
Yeah, I was born in 42, you know, and I am not Jewish and I don't know anything about Europe and I don't know anything about the Holocaust and that. And when I had been real sick or real stressed, I have had really, really strong feelings that I was Jewish and died in a concentration camp.
Mm.
And I've never been into that history at all, and I don't have any information on it. And I just wanted to share that because it was a couple of times before I realized that that is what I was experiencing, and I started telling friends that I believed that I had died in a concentration camp. And it was interesting. I just turned the radio on tonight when you were mentioning those years. Your belief is that I would have reincarnated shortly after my death. Is that it? Morris?
Yes, I would advise you to do some work with that and to sort of see what's happening with it, because that is a very insidious thing. It will not go away in most instances. And most of the time we find that people who died in those camps were in great shock and fear and terror, and they came back very quickly as a means of getting some sort of safety for themselves.
Huh. Okay, thanks a lot.
You seem to have the choice of coming back quickly or lingering longer, or do you?
In most instances, yes.
Hmm. Dr. Morris Netherton, it has been a delight. Will you come back and do it again with us sometime this fall?
Sure, anytime.
It's a fascinating subject, and I think an important one that people learn to deal with, grasp, and get into. We'll see you next week with Dr. Peoples.